Watching the Mind 101, Suwon Santitam, April 3rd, 2009.
Welcome, everyone. It is nice to see a new generation of people interested in the Dhamma, the Buddha's teachings on the true nature of things. I find that young and inexperienced people are much better students of the Dhamma. They are much easier to teach because they are open to learning new things. They haven't filled their teacups to the brim, so to speak. Adults who have meditation experience are often the most difficult to teach. They are usually stuck in samatha, which is the practice of intently focusing on an object of meditation to reach a temporary state of calmness or peace. This practice predates the Buddha and does not lead to an understanding of the true nature of things. It does not lead to the end of suffering, to enlightenment. Vipassana is the meditation we need to practice in order to set the stage for enlightenment. It is important that we don't create an idea in our heads that meditation practice is something difficult. Many people think that we must sit for hours or do walking meditation for days on end in order to truly practice the Dhamma. This is a misunderstanding. Dhamma is a subject of study, but it is to be learned by studying ourselves. The scope of our study is regarding how we can live with little or no suffering. The ultimate objective of studying the Dhamma is to be completely liberated from suffering. We keep studying, keep practicing, until we are free from suffering. Now there are two main kinds of suffering, that of body and that of mind. Since we are alive, suffering of the body is certain. Even the Buddha himself had a body that suffered. The scriptures describe many circumstances in which the Buddha was ill, and as he neared the end of his life, he was dreadfully so, passing blood. Though the body of an enlightened one can be hot, cold, angry, thirsty, or ill, the mind is completely free of suffering. No matter what life presents, the mind no longer suffers. None of my students here have reached this point yet, but many have significantly reduced suffering. We need to keep practicing, keep studying the body and mind until there is no more attachment to them. One day, there will be a complete release from attachment to body and mind, and suffering will end. The vast majority of people are completely immersed in suffering. When one's body is ill, or even just uncomfortable, his mind suffers. Or someone can have a strong and healthy body, but his mind suffers when he is merely not getting what he wants. Or perhaps he loses some assets or is wanting new ones. The mind is once again filled with suffering. The mind is finding ways to suffer all the time. The Buddha taught how to reduce suffering, and if we keep practicing, we can live as a person in this world with no mental suffering at all. It is not so difficult. For those of us who are intellectuals, who have many responsibilities in this world, who use our minds all day long, it is most appropriate for us to practice by way of watching the mind. This is about knowing what is going on in our mind right now. Can we see that our mind is incessantly moving and changing states? One moment it is happy, the next it is unhappy. One moment it is nice, the next it is mean. One moment it is lost in thought, the next moment it is lost in focusing on something. It wanders off, daydreams, gets angry, and the list goes on. Have we ever been angry with our superiors at work or at school? Can we notice that we feel differently about each of them? We may look at one and feel we really like her, while when we look at another, we feel a lot of distaste. Even disliking the subject she teaches can make us look at her in disgust. Many things may come up in the mind just from seeing. We may start complaining that our teacher or boss is too picky or mean. The people we don't like, we think they are no good at all. We criticize them, which implies that we think we are better than they are or know more than they do. We see this person and like him. We see that person and dislike her. The way to practice Dhamma here, in simple terms, is to gauge the mind. We see the liking or disliking. We see the kindness or unkindness. We see the happiness or unhappiness. We see in one moment anger, the next greed, and perhaps we see the mind is deluded after that. The mind may be thinking busily. Do we all know what this is like? Most of us are off thinking this way right now. Do we know what feeling down, disappointed, annoyed, or worried is like? Sure we do. How about feeling happy, sad, or jealous? From now on, when we are jealous, we should notice that the mind is jealous. Have we ever been scared? Many guys like to act as if they are brave and confident, but actually they are full of fear. They need to have a woman by their side. If we practice the Dhamma, when fear appears in the mind, we know it is afraid as quickly as possible so that fear doesn't discreetly come in and take us over. Whatever state comes up in the mind, whether it is pleasant or unpleasant, we notice that it has arisen, right then and there. As examples, the mind may be happy, upset, angry, scared, worried, depressed, or disappointed. We are just to know honestly that this is so. The word Buddha means to know. The Buddhist approach is to know. We know what has arisen and start to realize whatever arises is temporary. Has anyone here been angry for a whole year? How about a whole month? How about a whole day? Can we see that no matter how angry we are, it goes away? We only feel angry again if we think about the situation again. When we were young, a kid may have punched us and caused pain and anger. When we think of it now, anger can still arise, but it won't stay long. Nothing does. Things arise, stay temporarily, and then fall away soon after. When things we don't like go away, like the end of a boring class or a dreadful day at work, we feel relieved temporarily. When it just won't end, however, we feel heavy. Do we know what a heavy mind feels like? It really does feel heavy. Can we see that there are many different mental states, all of varying degrees? Fear and hate feel different. Disgust and hate also feel different. Can we see this? Sometimes the differences are obvious, sometimes subtle.
The three aspects to watching the mind effectively.
There are three aspects to watching the mind. Three tendencies to remember to avoid if we are to practice effectively. The first is to avoid intending to know in advance. We just need to know the feelings that temporarily arise in the mind after they do. Let the feeling occur naturally first, and then know that it has. If anger arises, know that it has. If greed arises, then know that it has. If the mind has wandered off, know that this has happened. Why must we know after the fact? This is because many of the feelings that arise are defilements of mind. For example, anger, desire. Only one mind arises at a time, so a defiled mind cannot arise at the same time as a non-defiled mind. For example, anger cannot exist in the mind at the same moment that mindfulness notices the anger. The defiled, angry mind drops off and is replaced by a non-defiled mind, the one that is mindful of what just happened.
It is important to not watch intently and wait for what will arise next. Let a feeling arise first and then know that it has. A good way to demonstrate this is to imagine a rabid dog suddenly darting at us.
We feel terrified. We then should know that fear has arisen.
Of course, we should still get out of the way of the dog. We do not proceed to let the dog bite us and see what happens after that. Anyone who says they will just leave it up to their karma is making new karma, stupidity. We do what is appropriate so that we are not harmed. If we are with a friend, we just need to run a little faster than our friend and we'll be fine. Or we can practice the art of sacrifice and run slower than our friend. But that is another topic altogether. As I am speaking here, many people here have their minds wandering out. Some are wandering to me, some are wandering in thought, and some have wandered home already. Back to the lesson, we should not intend to watch the mind. Many people have too much intention. They wait for the gong to be struck to begin the meditation session and say, "Okay, when the session begins, I'm really going to watch my mind well." To their surprise, little happens. This is because they focused in beforehand and made their mind still. When we hold our attention somewhere, there won't be much movement to notice. The mind will be immobilized. Instead, we should practice in the most natural way. Each time the mind thinks, or the eyes, ears, nose, tongue, or body makes contact with the outside world, a feeling is likely to appear. Be aware of what does. If we hear a song and like it, we should know that liking has arisen. If someone is shouting, wanting may arise. We may want to know what this person is ranting and raving about. Know that wanting to know has arisen. Then we listen for a while and realize that it is us he is going on about. Wanting to know will have disappeared, and anger crops up. Our job is to know that anger has arisen. Know after the fact, again and again, as much as possible. Watching the mind is not about focusing in advance. It is about knowing what has arisen. Okay, now I want all of you to start watching the mind. Right now. Watch it. Can you see that you are starting to freeze up? To get still? This is because you're intending to watch. It is the wrong approach. Okay, now I would like you to stop watching the mind, and I'll tell you an old story. Can you feel that you're starting to relax again? When something easy and amusing is about to happen, our mind loosens up and relaxes. Know that it has relaxed. This is the right approach. Intending to watch will stiffen us up, and thus things will not arise naturally. So the right approach is to not intend, and instead to know what arises after the fact. This is the first of the three aspects to teach regarding watching the mind. I should mention, however, that when we know, we need to know quickly. We can't be angry today and realize it tomorrow. When anger arises, we need to recognize that there is anger while the anger is still there. If it has already dropped away, and we wake up to it an hour later, it is too late. We should recognize the anger while it is there. We will notice, just a moment ago I was angry, and now I am knowing. We will see that when we are mindful of the anger is not there in that moment of knowing. No subsequent to the arising of phenomena, but as close to their arising as possible without prior intention. Once we are able to recognize many different states in this way, mindfulness will come automatically and the path to wisdom that will liberate us from suffering will begin. Now I'll tell you about the second aspect of watching the mind correctly. The mind should not slip down into any of the mental phenomena or feelings of which you have become mindful. Normally, when we want to know something, our minds will move out to the place of interest. Try it now. Let's have a look at our arm and see how many birthmarks there are. Can you see that your mind went out to look at the arm? I'm not interested in how many birthmarks there are. I want us to notice that the mind goes out. The mind is not stable, not rooted in awareness. It is slipping down into what it is knowing. We can easily see this happen when we read something a bit far away, like a poster on our wall or a street sign. The mind runs out to see it, and then it goes into thinking, internally repeating the words it is reading. When we watch the mind, we should know what has arisen from a distance, as if we are not involved in what is going on. Don't move towards the feeling or mental state once it has been acknowledged. For example, if anger arises in the mind, see it as if it is someone else who has just become angry. The mind is just the watcher. There is a distance between the mind and the anger. Don't focus in on the anger. The tendency of meditators is to go in and focus on what has come up, just like when zeroing in on the television when our favorite show is on. The mind goes out to the TV and gets lost in it. From now on, whenever the mind goes out to watch something, know that this is happening. When we see this happen, the mind will become stable on its own. We should not try to force it to be stable in awareness. Vipassana practice has no force in it whatsoever. It is about knowing things as they really are. If there is force, there is stress, which is always a sign that there is something wrong. So we don't force it. We just know it when the mind slips down into something. If we think of a friend, our mind will slip into the world of thought and completely lose awareness of our body and mind. We need to know that this has happened, and the mind will become rooted on its own. When we watch football, we don't watch it from the field. We are in the stands, watching from a distance. The players are running around, but we are stable. There is a space between us and the game. Similarly, at a concert, we watch the band from our seats. We do not take the stage. There is a distance between us and the performance. We are merely the watcher. This is how we should watch our feelings, from a distance. We should not slip down and cling to the feelings. When we do, we should know this as soon as we can, and the mind will loosen its grip on what has arisen and become the watcher for that moment. The third aspect of watching the mind applies after we know what has arisen. We don't interfere in any way with the feeling or mental phenomenon that we have recognized. It absolutely doesn't matter what it is that arises. We let it be. If anger arises, we do not try to make it go away. Our job with regards to the anger is just to know that the mind is angry. We do our best to be just the watcher and not get in the way. We are not trying to get rid of suffering if it arises. We are to just recognize that it is there. If happiness arises, we don't try to make it last long. If a virtuous state arises, we don't try to keep it. We are just to know with equanimity, without maintaining, denying, or resisting what comes up. Formally put, the third aspect of watching the mind is to know what arises with a mind that is equanimous. This means the mind is impartial or neutral to whatever phenomena appear. Equanimity is accomplished by seeing the mind either liking or disliking what it has just recognized. Equanimity is not accomplished by forcing the mind to be neutral. Force causes stress. In Vipassana, there is no controlling, denying, resisting. We mustn't really do anything at all. At any given moment, whatever state the mind is in, know that it is in that state. If we see a beautiful woman walk by and craving appears in the mind, we don't look for a way to get rid of the craving. We don't try to get rid of the woman either. Just quickly acknowledge that the mind has craving. If the mind doesn't like the craving, then it is no longer impartial. It has aversion to the craving and wants it to go away. We are to know that this aversion or hatred has arisen. We are to know the mind is not equanimous. If happiness arises, and we like the happiness, the mind is not neutral. No, the mind is liking. Whenever a mental state arises and the mind likes it or doesn't like it, we should recognize it. If we keep doing this, equanimity will gradually result. We will know all mental phenomena with an equanimous mind. This is the third aspect of how to correctly and effectively watch the mind. If we add in a fourth aspect, it would be to watch the mind in this way with great frequency. If we follow 1 through 4, then Nibbana is certain to be realized one day. This is because we will have cultivated all the appropriate causes for this realization. The mind will incur a major shift, and suffering will drop off in great quantities at each stage of enlightenment. In summary, we practice the Dhamma so that one day no more suffering will arise in the mind. The way that we accomplish this is by the practice of knowing our minds. Each time that suffering sneaks up in the mind, see it, and eventually it will drop off on its own. There is no need to chase it away. Remember the three aspects or the three rules for watching the mind. Firstly, don't go looking for phenomena to know. Don't be presumptuous or wait in anticipation. Let one show itself first and then recognize it. Secondly, watch from a distance. let's not move our attention towards a phenomenon when it appears. Be an outsider. If we focus in, then we are practicing samatha, calmness meditation, not vipassana, the path of wisdom. And thirdly, subsequent to the arising of a mental phenomenon, notice when liking or disliking appears. Do this often, and the mind will on its own accord become equanimous to whatever arises. When we watch the mind in this way, we will see whatever arises as it really is. We will see the true nature of body and mind. We will see that body and mind are not us. We will keep seeing the truth of body and mind until we become dispassionate to their constant flux, to their insubstantiality, to their suffering nature. We will release attachment to them, be liberated, and know that liberation has taken place. What will we be liberated from? We will be liberated from attachment to this body and this mind. We will be liberated from suffering because suffering resides in this body and mind. Can you see that these are the only two places where suffering can be found? Upon liberation, suffering will be gone and we will become fully aware, awakened, and blissful without any effort or maintenance necessary. I'm sure you have heard an age-old saying, something to the tune of, learning is a lifelong process, life is a school, or we learn until the day we die. This is because there is no end to worldly knowledge. The world fabricates new things incessantly, and there is always more to learn. Regarding Dhamma, once there is enlightenment and the mind is liberated from suffering, it is no longer fabricating, no longer creating fictions. Once we are free from suffering, there is nothing more to learn in this regard. Our Dhamma studies are completed.